Whether this is her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct is everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Murder Homes is a production of iHeart Podcasts.
Something was happening. They were a little afraid. It was also a very harsh winter coming back to them. It was hard times. And in Germany, we say, die Nerven lagen blank. The nerves went blank.
In the spring of 1922, in the candle-lit apartment of a clairvoyant in Munich, a séance was being conducted in the hopes of finding a brutal murderer. Unable to make headway, German police had desperately reached out to the paranormal expert for assistance. They had arrived at the home of the clairvoyant with six tightly wrapped packages, and just as quickly, they had left, so that the clairvoyant could begin communing with the dead. Now, in flickering candlelight, in a hushed room with dark wooden paneling, the clairvoyant had unwrapped each package and carefully placed six human skulls around him, each one horribly fractured. In a rhythmic voice, he called out the name of each victim, telling them that they were finally in a safe place. The grandfather Andreas, his wife Cecilia, their daughter Victoria, and her two children, Josef and little Cecilia, and then the maid, Maria. But the dead stayed silent and revealed nothing. No spirit breathed secrets into the clairvoyant's ear as he stared into the blackness of their eye sockets. This is the story of the Hinterkaifeck murders in western Bavaria, which remain unsolved to this day. This is Murder Homes. I'm Matt Marinovich. Andreas Gruber, rich by the standards of the time, was the first to be lured to the barn outside his stone farmhouse, followed by his wife, daughter, and her child. One by one, they were butchered with a pickaxe, and then heaped one on top of the other and covered with straw, the young girl surviving long enough to tear clumps of hair from her head, the last two, little Josef and the maid, Maria, slain in the home. Afterwards, the murderer made himself comfortable and enjoyed all the creature comforts of that home, where bread had been baking in the oven before the day was shattered, a thin trail of smoke wafting from the chimney. The murder farmhouse in western Bavaria no longer exists. The crime that happened there on March 31st, 1922, was so terrible that it was torn down 1 year afterwards. All that stood for nearly 100 years was a wooden memorial in a grassy field with the names of the six victims. But now even that has been torn down. And if you're driving by on the narrow, gently curving road, you'd never know what happened here. In a nearby cemetery, the headless bodies of Andreas Gruber, wife Cecilia, their daughter Victoria, and her two children were interred 100 years ago. In a bureaucratic slip-up, the heads were lost after their side trip to the hapless clairvoyant and never reunited with the rest of their bodies. So much for German efficiency. In Germany, serial killers occasionally have catchy songs written about them. Put on your dancing shoes and spin your partner around to this one.
In Hannover an der Leine, friend of my aunt. Wohnt der Massenmörder Harman, der die Menschen umgebracht.
The song you're listening to is about Fritz Harman, the butcher of Hanover, who liked to bite the Adam's apples off young men and boys and then chop their bodies up from head to toe, scattering their bones all over his neighborhood. The lyrics are well known to most school children in Hanover, who know the words by heart. In a faraway town, there lived a man who'd murder young men and slice up the meat and sell it to hungry town people to eat. After serial killer and cutting-edge chef Fritz Harman was guillotined, his head was kept in a jar of formaldehyde for 89 years before it was incinerated. You can still see images of it if you have the nerve to Google Fritz Harman and guillotined head. There's a little bit of 5 o'clock shadow on his face, and his black hair is neatly trimmed, one vein disconcertingly bulging out of his temple. Other than that, he looks like he's taking a midday nap. There's no morbidly catchy song about Kinterkaifeck. The killer has slipped in and out of history, watches us all still as we foolishly try to imagine his face. I had plenty of time to think about these kind of things on a recent trip to Germany. I was on a kind of secret mission, hoping to find out more about a murder case that was even more disturbing than Fritz Harman's rampage. Of all the stories in Germany, Hinterkaifeck holds a special demonic place in the hearts of crime buffs who can't let it go. I left Berlin early in the morning with my girlfriend and caught a train to Munich, listening to the train conductor call off the stops. We zipped across the German countryside at 140 miles an hour, endless fields of grass rushing by, only interrupted by a few islands of fir trees in the distance, wind turbines slowly spinning on the horizon. With all that apparent green space, I was astonished by a little fact my girlfriend shared with me. In Germany, they recycle their dead. After 20 to 30 years, caskets are removed to make room for new ones. Burial space is usually rented. I guess that's great for the environment, but it got me thinking about the dead and how sometimes their presence grows larger as time goes on. Even if their wooden memorial has been torn down, the 6 victims who were slaughtered at the farm in Hinterkaifeck in the winter of 1922 continue to haunt us to this day. Aimlessly walking around Munich, I watched a street performer whistle a Beatles tune and sipped a 15-euro macchiato on a bright blue day, thinking about Hinterkaifeck. I had planned to go there, but now there was nowhere to pay my respects. Even the bench near the shrine had been cleared away. Fortunately, staring at my laptop in my hotel room, I soon found 2 Germans who were even more obsessed with Hinterkaifeck than me. Jasmine, whose voice you heard at the beginning of this episode, is a rheumatologist, but her hobby is the pursuit of this unsolved crime. And Olaf is a professor who spends every free minute thinking about it. They've created a website that contains hundreds of pages of information and only agreed to talk to me when I proved I wasn't a pretender when it comes to the crime. If you want to be taken seriously when you talk about Hinterkaifeck in Germany, you stick close to the known facts, and there are only a handful of them. One of the most chilling things about the Hinterkaifeck murders is that the killer chose to get inside the victims' heads long before the murders. Months before the murders, the family maid had heard footsteps in the attic, and she became convinced that the home was haunted. To allay her fears, Andreas Gruber, the father, searched the attic but found no one. The maid was too spooked and quit soon after. And that wasn't the only strange occurrence at the farm. One morning, Andreas saw that someone had left behind a copy of a newspaper, the Munich Zeitung, at the edge of the forest near the home, which didn't make sense since the city was 82 miles away from the Hinterkaifeck farm. When he asked the postman if he left it there by mistake, the man said it wasn't his. And then things got even stranger. A week before the murders, a light snow had fallen, and Andreas noticed evenly spaced, deliberate footsteps leading straight from the edge of the woods to a machine room with a broken lock on the farm. The most disturbing thing was that whoever had crunched across the snow that morning and into his farm hadn't left. Andreas did a thorough search, just as he had in the attic, but didn't find anything. It was as if a ghost was holed up there, waiting. I asked Jasmine and Olaf about these unsettling details.
So, yes. What is your feeling about the footsteps, the newspaper? In other words, do you believe that they were being watched?
Well, there's one aspect which wonders me all the time, and this is, if you look at the date when that all happened, it was the end of a week, it was the end of a month, and the end of its quarter of a year. So if there would have been any kind of deadline, this was the date of the deadline. So I think there was some kind of, there was something happening, something going on. They fought with each other. We know that it was not a harmonic family life at that time. Something was happening. They were a little afraid. But it was also a very harsh winter coming back to them. It was hard times. The food for the cattle was getting empty, and they couldn't work at the fields, but they had to get the year starting. So I think it was a very harsh time for any of them.
Just 2 days before the murders, it was reported that Cecilia, Andres' wife, had a nervous breakdown and ran into the woods, hysterically hyperventilating and sobbing. Andreas Gruber found her there and walked his distraught wife back to the farm. Had she been terrified by something she had seen or heard? I wanted to ask Jasmine and Olaf about this too, but even in their dimly lit rooms on the Zoom call, I could see that they were frowning. There's a certain etiquette to talking about Hinterkaifeck. If you're really interested in it, you have to admit you know nothing, and any garbage you've read on Wikipedia, keep it to yourself. I wanted to know more about Cecilia's nervous breakdown in the icy woods. Why had she run away from home?
A few days before the murder, wasn't she very upset and in the forest? Didn't they have to take her back from the forest to the house?
Yeah, but it's not clear which woman that was.
Okay. But then I want to ask the question, if you believe that the murderer was stalking them, or the cliche, the cat and mouse thing where he's watching or stalking or taunting. Do you believe that? Or do you believe that the newspaper and the footsteps are unconnected to the murderer?
I think they were connected, but I wouldn't talk of stalking. So I think we know from the documents that many people knew that this family was especially rich. So this farm was a good target for anyone who wanted to have food or money. So I wouldn't say that this stalking was systematic.
A day before the murders, a new maid, Maria, arrived at the farm, accompanied by her sister, who left that night, and was the last person to see the family alive. In 2007, a group of students at a police academy in Germany investigated the crime using modern forensics. They did come up with a prime suspect, but here's the maddening part. They refused to name the suspect out of respect for his descendants. But according to Jasmine and Olaf, it is common knowledge who the academy selected as the most likely suspect in their mock exercise. A man named Lorenz Schlittenbauer, who lived with his family close to the Grubers. Lorenz Schlittenbauer and Andreas Gruber had some very ugly history between them. And to understand why, we have to focus on the aging Andreas for a moment. Scrawny and sullen in his black clothes in the one photograph that survived. It's easy to imagine him as a stern taskmaster, the kind of guy who dominates every aspect of a household from dawn to dusk. But Andreas was also something else, a loathsome creep. In 1915, he had been convicted of incest with his daughter Victoria. This is fact. The rumor was that 7-year-old Cecilia was his child. Allegedly, even more acts of incest continued up to the murders. But Andreas didn't stop there. He hated the gossip and the rumors and the cold looks he got every day trudging into the small town. So he came up with a scheme. Why not accuse his neighbor, the younger Lorenz Schlittenbauer, of being the father of Cecilia? After all, everyone in town also knew that Lorenz and Victoria had been lovers. And it was clear that any time Victoria passed Lorenz in town, that he still had a raging crush on her, even though he was married. The calculating Andreas even took it a step further. He threatened to take Lorenz to court unless he paid child support. Blackmailing a married man to pay child support for your own incestuous offspring was a masterstroke, or at least the cagey Andreas thought so. He was so convinced of his scheme that there is strong evidence he resumed his incestuous relationship with Victoria. And you wonder why his wife, Cecilia, ran screaming into the woods that cold spring and had a nervous breakdown? I found myself obsessively thinking about Hinterkaifeck. I imagined what it must have been like to be Lorenz Schlittenbauer, walking by the Gruber farmstead on an icy morning, forced to cough up child support for his shameless aging neighbor, Andreas. I could easily imagine his burning hatred. But when I talked to Olaf and Jasmine, they smiled at me knowingly. I had to go back to step one, admit I knew nothing. First of all, regardless of the child support and frontman role Lorenz was forced to play, he was on good enough terms with Andreas to be given the key to his farm. And when Andreas saw those footsteps in the snow, just a few days before his own murder, and followed them with a growing sense of dread to the machine room with the broken lock on his farm, who did he confide in? Lorenz. On April 1st, a neighbor had noticed smoke coming from the farmhouse chimney, and then saw a man with a lantern, though he couldn't identify him. On April 3rd, a repairman visited the farm and noticed the barn doors were locked and that a dog was barking inside. The repairman worked for 4 hours in the machine room at the farm, but when he left, he noticed that the dog was tied up outside the home and that the barn door was open. That was suspicious enough that Lorenz Schlittenbauer, who Andreas had given a key to his home, decided he had to investigate himself, bringing along two other men. The first place he checked was the barn, where the animals appeared well fed. The small group were about to exit when they saw something buried underneath the straw. Underneath, heaped on each other, were four bodies: Andreas, Victoria, Cecilia, and little Cecilia. All the victims had their skulls smashed with a pickaxe that was found on the property. In the home, the body of little Josef was found still in his bassinet, and the body of the maid Maria in the bed nearby. They had also been bludgeoned. Police believe the murderer had lured Andreas, his wife, and daughter to the barn one by one, and then he had made his way to the home. After the murders, he didn't leave. After all that butchering, he'd built up quite an appetite. For 4 days afterwards, there were signs that he had cooked himself hearty meals, fed the farm animals, warmed himself by the fire before drifting off to sleep, all while the corpses stiffened in the barn. This suspect, this ghost, had slipped away just before Lorenz had arrived on March 31st, the key to the front door of the home in his hand. Unless, of course, that ghost was Lorenz. Olaf and Jasmine don't believe Lorenz was the murderer.
So for me, I see that conflict, and that conflict must be very harsh at that time when it took place. But that was 1919. So it was 2.5 years before the murder. So I feel the time is very long to keep kind of aggressiveness, to really kill six people, including his own son. This seems not fitting for me. And also the kind of the attack, it seems to be done by foreign people, by people who needed to stay for one or even two nights after the killings, who took all the paper money with them. So that doesn't seem to fit to someone who is at his own house within 5 minutes and be able to get rid of the bloody clothes and maybe not be able to be missed from his family at the time.
In the beginning, I'm sure there was hatred, but 2.5 years after this all, I don't think there was hatred, because we know that they have talked to another, that Lorenz Schlittenbauer wanted to help Andreas Gruber's situation, where there was a burglary and so on. He wanted to help him, and I don't think he would have offered his help if he would have hated him so deeply.
Lorenz Schlittenbauer was never charged as a suspect, and to the day he died, filed numerous civil claims that he had been slandered. We'll be back after a short break. As you know, the world can be a dangerous and unpredictable place. With every case I've studied, I learned one thing. Your best line of defense is your vigilance and preparation. That's why I recommend Simply Safe Home Security. Just this week, a neighbor across the street told me that at 8 in the morning, he had seen three men run down the block and beat and rob a man who was carrying a bag of tools. I always think of this as a safe neighborhood, but I have to admit, I don't have that feeling 100% of the time. That's why I feel a little bit more at peace knowing that SimpliSafe, with its entry sensor, motion detectors, and cameras, is always on the lookout for me. SimpliSafe was named Best Home Security Systems 2024 by the U.S. News & World Report. And it's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day. Get 20% off any SimpliSafe system when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring. Just visit simplisafe.com/homes. That's simplisafe.com/homes. There's no safe like SimpliSafe.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
It took 11 years to get to this sale. The Knix Anniversary Sale is on now at knix.com. Celebrate the intimate apparel company that has reinvented products for real life with one of Knix's biggest sales of the year. Get 30% off all leak-proof apparel from the number one leak-proof brand in North America, including period underwear, swimwear, activewear, and more. Millions of people have made the switch to Knix leak-proof underwear, and there's never been a better time for you to try. Save 30% on super comfortable, machine-washable, and great-looking underwear that's perfect for periods and light bladder leaks. Choose from a variety of colors, styles, and sizes, from extra small to 4XL. You can even match your leak-proof underwear with an incredibly supportive and comfortable Knix wireless bra. Don't miss this chance to stock up on your Knix favorites or try something new. It only happens once a year at Knix.com. That's KNIX.com for the Knix Anniversary Sale. Hurry, the sale ends on Monday, May 13th. Go to Knix.com. That's KNIX.com.
We're back with Murder Homes. Recently, a best-selling book titled The Man from the Train named another suspect in the Hinterkaifeck murders. A tramp and drifter named Peter Mueller, who the authors Rachel and Bill James believed was responsible for nearly 100 axe murders in the United States from the years 1896 to 1912. Mueller was only concretely connected to the murder of a family in West Brookfield, Massachusetts in 1897. But Rachel and Bill James believe that Mueller went on to become one of the United States' most prolific serial killers, and that he perfected the way he murdered people over time, invading homes at night, using an axe, sometimes inhabiting the home afterwards, covering the bodies with clothes, and then using a train to flee the scene. And there's almost always a young girl who is also a victim. Mueller is of Austrian or German descent, with a thick accent. I asked Rachel James to tell me a little bit more about Mueller, who was only really seen twice by witnesses before fleeing Massachusetts.
He had a vibe, and it was not a good vibe. He was small and angry looking. He was seen on the way to that train, and we think at some point people remember seeing him at the next stop, but after that, the trail is lost.
Rachel believes that it's a rare kind of maniac who is capable of killing adults and children over and over again. Together with his very unique methods, that's why she links him to Hinterkaifeck.
Hinterkaifeck is one of the ones I am less sure of, but, you know, it takes a lot to be able to kill that many people that efficiently and also be that brutal to little children. That's not something that somebody in a crime of passion would necessarily do. But the fact is that we say that the man from the train maybe killed these children, that's something that we pretty well know that he does. That's something that he has a pattern of doing. So that is part of what makes it persuasive for me. is that killing little children is a standard deviation above your usual crime of passion, personally motivated, revenge, spurned lover type crime. That's an extra level of evil, and it takes an extra level of motivation.
I mentioned Paul Mueller to Olaf and Jasmine, and they were merely amused. I could tell they thought the Jameses, as well-intentioned as they were totally off base. I asked them who they thought did it. They both agreed the real murderer would never be identified, but Jasmine went further. She felt she had a handle on the type of murder this was.
I really think there were one or two men, homeless, going around, going from farm to farm, from village to village, and trying to get food, get to work. And I think it was only a good opportunity to get into the farm, getting away from the wind and the chill and the snow, and maybe the situation escalated. So I really think it was a robbery.
Jasmine explained that in 1922, it was not uncommon to see penniless drifters wandering through the countryside, some of whom would steal corn or even hay. Coming upon a farmhouse like Hinterkaifeck, with a tantalizing smell of bread baking in the oven, they would have sensed an opportunity. In the attic, Jasmine had mentioned that police had found two indentations where a couple of drifters or petty thieves could have hidden out, sleeping just a few feet above the family at night.
The police there, and I share this opinion, they thought that the killers, maybe two persons, were lying in that hay in the attic. And we know that Andreas Gruber, he had searched the attic when someone tried to get into the house. So when there were the pits in the hay, they must have been after the killings. So I think there were one or two people, maybe two, that's more possible. And they were using the darkness and avoiding the cold and the rain and snow outside. And they were just calming down and trying to get a good moment to get off the farm, maybe to reach a train or something.
To add weight to this theory of a crime of opportunity, Jasmine pointed out that Hinterkaifeck was a robbery. Cash was taken. A box laden with valuables only missed because it was well hidden.
They did find one paper money. It was 5 Reichsmark, and it was lying in a book for the church. So all the other things, all the other money, they would have needed to buy something or would have got from people they sold something to. It was missing. What the police found, and this is a big issue, was a metal box with gold money and silver money. And this was hidden in a cupboard. Okay. So the killer, he did not find this box with the valuable money, and the paper money was gone. It wasn't there. So for me, there's no other conclusion than that the killer had taken it with him.
Okay, so that points obviously to a robbery.
Yes, maybe not the first goal of the killing. I can't say that, but the killer took the paper money.
If it's a robbery, then it could be that the robbery had gotten out of hand. Witnesses, no matter how young and helpless they were, had to be eliminated. The animals who were subsequently cared for by the murderer couldn't identify him in a police lineup. Maybe to reach a train? Suddenly I thought of Rachel James and how she felt there was a good chance the murderous railroad tramp Paul Mueller had done it. It's the Hinterkaifeck carousel. You can get off and on, the story changing a little every time, depending on whose eyes you choose to see it through. When it comes to Hinterkaifeck, answers last about as long as the murderer's footsteps in the spring snow. We'll be back after a short break.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect.
Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
It took 11 years to get to this sale. The Knix Anniversary Sale is on now at knix.com. Celebrate the intimate apparel company that has reinvented products for real life with one of Knix's biggest sales of the year. Get 30% off all leak-proof apparel from the number one leak-proof brand in North America, including period underwear, swimwear, activewear, and more. Millions of people have made the switch to Knix leak-proof underwear, and there's never been a better time for you to try. Save 30% on super comfortable, machine-washable, and great-looking underwear that's perfect for periods and light bladder leaks. Choose from a variety of colors, styles, and sizes, from extra small to 4XL. You can even match your leak-proof underwear with an incredibly supportive and comfortable Knix wireless bra. Don't miss this chance to stock up on your Knix favorites or try something new. It only happens once a year at Knix.com. That's KNIX.com for the Knix Anniversary Sale. Hurry, the sale ends on Monday, May 13th. Go to Knix.com. That's KNIX.com.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back with Murder Homes. I still wonder if a robber or a thief would have vanished from the scene of the crime minutes after eliminating the witnesses. To me, the murderer seems more precise, calculating, calm. This is why I believe Lorenz, after all these years, is still the strongest suspect. He had knowledge of Andreas's depraved sexual proclivities and had been roped into clearing his name by paying child support and might have still had feelings for Victoria. Upon seeing Andreas's mangled body, the two neighbors accompanying him recalled that Lorenz hadn't shown the slightest shock or emotion. As he led them to the main home where the other bodies were, they realized he knew each room of the farmhouse by heart, and of course had been entrusted with a key that unlocked it. Hinterkaifeck is such a frightening crime because the horror of what happened is only caught in terrifying glimpses. The footsteps in the snow that only go one way. The sound of someone walking in the attic. A newspaper left behind. Smoke wafting from a chimney after the family has been slaughtered. It's the comforts of home and all it represents turned upside down. A reverse nightmare where the murderer sits by your hearth, lightly stroking your dog's head. In the world of true crime, there must be no greater pleasure than chasing down a criminal who might have already lived and died twice over. It's funny listening to the Fritz Harman song. Sort of. Dark humor, tasteless jokes, are ways the living try to take back power from the most cold-blooded killers. But it's also a little strange because Harman was executed in 1924, only 2 years after Hinterkaifeck. And there's no humor, not a single joke I've heard or a catchy song about that cursed farm home in Bavaria. There's still nothing remotely funny about Hinterkaifeck. He keeps on calling to us, asking how long we would dare put ourselves in the victim's place. Stepping toward the guillotine and hitching up a pant leg, the butcher of Hanover, Fritz Harman, was the perfect gentleman. He said, "I am guilty, gentlemen, but I want to die as a man." And as if that wasn't polite enough, he added this, just before the 88-pound blade neatly detached his head from the rest of his body. "I repent," he said, "but I do not fear death." No one repented for Hinterkaifeck. It's the worst kind of crime, the one that is eternally left up to our imagination, the embers in a hearth slowly turning gray, one last wisp of smoke trailing from the farmhouse chimney, the bread going hard and stale. The dog, left alone for good now, steadily barking again, guarding no one. And this murder home, all signs of it now removed from the earth it once stood on, still grows in stature. YouTube morbid tourists camp out and film themselves braving a night in the forest nearby, shivering in a tent till dawn, until they emerge in the vast, shimmering clearing that was once Hinterkaifeck. What do you do with all that empty silence? Admit you know nothing. Murder Homes is created by and executive produced by Matt Marinovich. Executive producers are Jennifer Bassett and Taylor Chacoin. Story editor is Jennifer Bassett. Supervising producer is Carl Cadel. Producer is Evan Tyre. Sound design by Taylor Chacoin, Evan Tyre, and Carl Cadel. Special thanks to Ali Perry and Nikki Ator. Murder Homes is a production of iHeart Podcasts. For more shows from iHeart Podcasts, visit the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Become a part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry with an education from Trinity School of Natural Health. Trinity graduates can empower their communities through natural health principles and techniques, whether they go into practice to guide others toward their wellness goals or open a store to sell their favorite health products. Trinity grads are equipped to change lives. With 19 online programs and flexibility to fit your busy schedule, including the popular Certified Natural Health Professional, you can get the training that helps you turn your passion into a career. And here's the best part. You can earn the certification in less than a year. From herbology to naturopathy and health coaching, Trinity allows you to make a meaningful difference by helping others live healthier, happier lives. Don't wait any longer to pursue your passion for natural health. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP, the Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs and Schools.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us.
He was trying to brand us. So we were going to become the McDonald's of kid treatment.
Join my hosts as they unravel the story of the largest and most shocking organization in the history of the troubled teen industry. Listen to season two of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.